Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. It may be over, but it is far from forgotten. Yesterday's great American eclipse still has people buzzing. We had a front row seat in this part of Missouri and Illinois as that 70-mile-wide shadow cut through both states. It was the first total solar eclipse seen in this region in more than 500 years. Our first guest opted to watch it someplace else, in Wyoming. David Barron is a self-described umbrophile and avowed eclipse chaser. He's seen several of them and is the author of American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. He joins us by phone to react to his most recent experience. He joins us from Jackson Hole, Wyoming. David, before we start, let me just ask our listening audience and remind them that we'd like to hear from them as well during our discussion. We'd like to check in on what their experiences were yesterday. I'm sure we have a wide variety of those experiences. But back to Jackson Hole. Again, nice to talk to you again.
Very nice to be back on, Don. I hope you had a great experience in your part of the country.
Well, we did. Ours was a little muted because we were in a studio during the actual eclipse, but we were in contact with a lot of folks who were very, very impressed by it. How many have you seen now?
This was my sixth total solar eclipse, and it was one of the best. My first one, I think, will always stand out, probably as the most memorable, in part because it was the first, but it was just spectacular here in Wyoming. The skies were crystal clear. And it just was an amazing, amazing day.
Why did you choose Wyoming?
Well, I live in Colorado, so this was a reasonable place to go in terms of proximity for me. In Colorado, the path of totality did not cross Colorado, so coming to Wyoming made sense. But Jackson, which is on the far quarter of the state away from where I live, I just chose because it's one of the prettiest spots in the country right here in the Tetons. And so I was actually up on top of one of the Tetons, one that you can access by a tram. I didn't climb on up, but I went up at the ski resort, and I was up over 10,000 feet, and my gosh, that was a great place to watch a total eclipse.
What were the qualities about this one that made it so much more special than the others, with perhaps the exception of the first?
Yeah, well, so, you know, the main thing that people see if they have a clear sky during a total eclipse is the sun's corona, the sun's outer atmosphere. And the solar corona looks different every time. It is a very active part of the sun, and it's the shape is constantly changing. And so the shape this year was particularly interesting. What I saw, and different people in different conditions may have seen something slightly different, but I saw three large streamers coming off, sort of like a fishtail from my vantage point to the upper right, and another large triangular streamer to the lower left. It was a very interesting shape. So the first one I saw in Aruba was a very, very vivid corona, but a very different shape. It looked sort of like it was pinched on the top and bottom, like with strands of cotton being pulled apart. This one looked more like, it's sort of like pennants flying off the sun.
So no matter how many of them you see, you're always going to see something a little bit different.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the sun itself is different every time. The sky, sometimes the sky gets very dark, sometimes not quite so dark. This one was sort of in between for me. The only other object I saw in the sky besides the solar corona was Venus. I was not able to spot any stars or any of the other planets. And where I was, being so high up, I had a very good view of one of the great things you can see during totality, which is this 360-degree sunset effect, because overhead it was twilight, but on the horizon all around me, and again, I was on a mountaintop, I could just see this orange horizon ringing me. So, and this was the only one I've seen from so high up. The mountaintop I was on, there were probably a couple hundred people up there. We felt like a small community alone in the world. We couldn't see anybody else. It was just us and the sky. It was just spectacular.
It was a communal event in so many places. I have a clip here that I'd like to play from one of our listeners who experienced it with some fellow workers. Let's listen to what Denise Jones had to say.
Hi, this is Denise Jones at Wells Fargo Advisors. We were very fortunate that our company gave us some approved ISO expect to witness the eclipse, and it was pretty amazing event to hear, like, once the as close as we were going to get as far as total covering, there was a bit of applause that occurred as it was happening. So it was nice to kind of be part of a moment with coworkers staring up at the sky for this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
I wanted to play that, David, because as I mentioned before listening to it, there is this feeling of a communal togetherness, if you will, community togetherness, call it what you will. And I guess you've experienced this in all of those that you've seen.
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful. I mean, it's this shared moment of awe. Just, there's something sort of, it feels almost religious about it. It's like being in church or synagogue. And, I would also say that, whoever you're with, there's a real sense of bonding. But I made a point for this eclipse to see it with a whole bunch of family members. There were more than a dozen of us on that mountaintop. So I had my father and stepmother and brothers and their families, niece and nephew. And it was particularly fun seeing it with the kids. They were so excited. And, they had not seen a total eclipse before, and boy, they are hooked now.
Well, they've got another one coming in just 7 years.
Yes, and so maybe we'll come out to your part of the country for that. We'll go to Southern Illinois. We definitely have plans to see it. I think we'll wait a little while before we decide precisely where we'll see it.
At what altitude were you yesterday?
We were at about 10,400 feet, so that was pretty high. And, out here in the West, one thing that has been a concern in the last few weeks has been forest fires, which obviously are a concern for the destruction that they cause. But also there was worry that that was going to cause some problem for getting a really clear view of the eclipse. And in fact, here in northwestern Wyoming, there has been a bit of haze settling in the valleys. But where we were up on a mountaintop, the sky, we could see haze below, but the sky above was just crystal clear. And so that was one of the advantages of being on a mountaintop. There was literally less atmosphere between us and the sun. So I think we had a particularly good view of the corona where we were.
We have a caller who also was at some altitude during the eclipse. Let's bring in Ryan. He's calling from St. Louis. Ryan, go ahead. You're on the air.
How's it going?
Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just recently got my pilot certificate back in November, and then when I heard about this slip, it was 2-3 months ago, and I went ahead and reserved my plane from the flying club as soon as possible to make sure I had it. I went out about a half an hour before the total eclipse. I did a nice flight into the city, went around the arch, and then followed the river down to an area where I could circle up to about 8,000 feet. And yesterday there were a bunch of clouds at my altitude kind of towering up because there were storms brewing, but I was in the center of all of it. And once when it got dark, you could see lightning in the clouds in the north. But about 35, 40 miles away on either side of me, you could see light just kind of lighting up the land and the clouds, even though I was in the dark right in the center there. So it was pretty neat experience.
You had a double-barreled Mother Nature experience with lightning on one side and the total eclipse on the other above you.
It was pretty epic yesterday.
How long was the period of totality for you? Was it a little bit longer because you were aloft?
I wouldn't say so. At the max, it felt like maybe 2 minutes. And I was actually really surprised that there weren't more planes in the air where I was at, actually.
Well, maybe that was a good thing.
I had all my life. No one would run into anyone. But
no.
I ended up on their plane. So.
Ryan, thank you so much for the call and sharing that experience. What do you think, David? That's something you haven't tried yet, is watching it from an airplane.
No, I haven't. And so what he just described, seeing the sunlight in the distance on either side, clearly he was looking down and could see the limits of the moon's shadow, right? So the shadow was 70 miles wide. That's how wide the path of totality was, and he could see out on either side. And actually, that was one of the things I was hoping to see from the mountaintop, was to actually be able to look down and see the shadow as it raced across the land. It didn't quite work out that way. The mountain we were on was ringed by other mountains that kind of hemmed us in the distance. So it was a great place to be, but I have yet to have that view of being able to look down and really see the moon's shadow as this giant oval racing across the earth.
You know, I want to talk to you for a moment about those streamers that you were seeing yesterday. Is this the result of those so-called solar winds?
It's actually the cause of the solar winds. Hmm. So the solar wind, which is made up of charged particles that fly out from the sun and through the solar system and pass by Earth and cause the northern lights and can disrupt our electronic communications and so forth, the solar wind is effectively what the solar corona becomes, because the corona itself is made of charged particles that are superheated to over a million degrees and being flung off the sun at great speed. And exactly, you know, the direction and the speed keeps changing as the solar corona keeps changing. So those streamers were what would become the solar wind as they continued out into space.
You know, someone mentioned on the air yesterday that those solar winds can reach speeds of a million miles an hour. Is that just some total exaggeration, or is that possible?
You know, I can't answer that. That wouldn't surprise me if that's true. I don't know what the actual number is, but the solar wind does move at tremendous speed.
There's something else that you mentioned that just triggered interest in an email we received here from Ward Silver, who is a ham radio operator. And there were about 500,000 individual signal reports across the country yesterday. There are a lot of ham operators out there, but here's what he said. He said, you could hear signals from different parts of the country changing as the eclipse passed their locations. That struck me as a little bit odd. Does it you?
No, because ham radio, and I believe AM radio too, is transmitted through the atmosphere by the ionosphere, this upper layer of the atmosphere, and the ionosphere changes from day to night, and you can transmit signals better at night. Well, effectively, when the moon's shadow goes over, you're having a very brief night in the ionosphere, and so that would change the transmission of radio signals during that brief period.
We've also had some communications from people who were reporting cell phone issues, but I gather that most of those issues were based on volume rather than any kind of interference from solar activity.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be an indirect effect of the eclipse, which is that it's caused large numbers of people with their smartphones to congregate in a very relatively narrow path from Oregon to South Carolina. So that was true here as well in the Jackson area. Cell phone service was sort of cutting in and out. But yeah, I don't think that had anything to do with what was going on the sun.
There are some other things, David Barron, that I'd like to talk to you about, but we have to take a break. We'll do that now. David, of course, is the author of American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. He was a guest on this program just a couple of weeks ago. We are obviously talking about eclipse and what he and what you experienced yesterday. Again, if you'd like to be a part of this conversation, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK, or send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org or a tweet at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We'll continue our conversation with David Barron. A lot of international interest in this eclipse, David, that you're aware of?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and there were a lot of international visitors who were out here. I mean, I'm sure you probably saw that in the St. Louis area here in Jackson, Wyoming. We heard voices speaking many, many different languages from around the world. So, yeah, this was not just an American event. I mean, and having gone to total eclipses around the world, there's this real international community of eclipse chasers that you'll find wherever you go.
I wonder what are the big unanswered questions that these eclipses might answer at some point. Is there something out there that is just begging for an answer?
Well, I mean, the big mystery of the solar corona is how in the world it is so hot. It is, you know, the solar corona is over a million degrees. whereas the surface of the sun is in the thousands of degrees. And, you know, it's like having steam rising off a kettle, and as it gets higher and higher, it's getting hotter and hotter. Usually when something moves from the source of heat, it gets colder. So why would the upper atmosphere of the sun be so much hotter than the surface? And, you know, the scientists have some ideas about that. It's probably that the sun's magnetic field is somehow transferring energy up through the atmosphere. But exactly how that happens is not known. And what was going on yesterday, in part, there were some efforts to make a continuous film of the solar corona as the shadow moved from Oregon to South Carolina. And I'm sure for years there will be scientists studying that movie to see how the corona develops and to see if they can figure out how energy is being transferred to it. So, you know, that I would say is the big question that scientists are trying to resolve.
It sounds like that's a question, though, that would really be difficult to answer, regardless of what pictures are there.
This is the way science develops. Uh-huh. Something looks really, really difficult, and then eventually you have the tools and the smarts to figure it out. Total eclipses back in the 19th century, as I write about in my book, there were huge, huge questions to be answered, and total eclipses were really the only chance that scientists had to answer some of those questions about exactly what the sun was made of and how it operated, and whether there were any planets in the inner solar system between Mercury and the sun. Those were really big questions. The questions being asked now are much more fine-tuning our understanding. And I don't want to diminish the importance of solar eclipses. They are still important, but scientists now have other ways to study the sun in great detail without the benefit of total eclipses.
We have a couple more listeners who are calling in. Let's take a couple more calls. We'll start with Chris calling from South City. Chris, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, we were on the Katy Trail with about 500 riders. The Department of Natural Resources put together a great viewing event, and we stopped at Hartsburg for the eclipse itself. And very similar to what your guest described as far as what we saw. We did see Venus, didn't see Mars, which I read about to look for a little later on, and didn't see the stars. All the crickets got very loud. It got, you know, semi-dark. It was really something else. But interesting, my question for your guest is, there's always like segments of like purple just as at just before totality, or I guess it was right at totality, like little segments of purple right on the edge, at the edge of the sun peeking out from the moon. And they were, you know, they were like not continuous, and there would be different portions of it. And I didn't expect that color like that. Wonder what that is.
Yes, well, what you saw, and generally the color is described more as a kind of a rosy pink, that is the chromosphere. That is the middle layer of the sun's atmosphere, and it glows that color due to hydrogen. And it's a very, very vivid color. And sometimes you'll see not just a continuous rim of it right at the beginning and right at the end of totality, but you might also see some what look like flames of that color coming off the sun, which are called solar prominences. And I saw a couple of very small ones yesterday. At previous total eclipses, I've seen some that are much more prominent. But that color is just really, really stunning.
We have an email along these lines from Don Riggs, who writes, he was at Carbondale, Illinois, which was the point of longest totality. But he says, during the totality, what was the little flashing red-blue lighted object adjacent to the planet on the right side of the corona? Do you have any idea?
Red, blue, what was the...
A flashing red, blue, lighted object adjacent to the planet on the right side of the corona. Not sure what planet he's talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't see it, so I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. Well, sorry we don't have the answer to that question. I want to play another listener response for you because I think you'll get a kick out of this, David Barron. This is from Jessica Marie in South St. Louis. This is a little bit different.
This is Jessica Marie calling from South St. Louis, and I was able to watch the total solar eclipse from my backyard over by Tower Grove Park. I have three cockatoos, and I took the big, very well-trained one named Misha on his harness and leash out into the backyard to watch the solar eclipse with me. I put him in the shade until the full eclipse, and then we both looked at the solar eclipse together, and he was very quiet but very alert, and my other birds inside were totally dead quiet, and whenever I am around and not in the same room as they are never quiet. And they've been quiet ever since it started, and because it's still going on now, although it's moving, obviously, and the solar eclipse has ended, but it's still moving, they're slowly becoming a little bit more loud. But it was really cool to go into my backyard with my big bird, take pictures and video, and see his reaction and experience that together. So anyways, that's me. That was my experience.
David, I'll bet you that's something you've never done, is taken a pet cockatoo to any one of your six solar eclipses.
No, I can't say I have done that, but I've certainly been around wild birds during previous total eclipses. Yesterday, being on a mountaintop over 10,000 feet, there were no birds there. But yes, birds very much, I would say more than any other kind of animals, maybe also insects, but birds very much will respond to a total eclipse. They think it's a sudden and bizarre dusk. And I bet many of your listeners experienced that too. Again, I didn't see it this year, but I have at previous eclipses where I would say about starting 10 or maybe 5 minutes before the total eclipse, the birds start flocking as if dusk is coming on, and some either start singing or some stop singing, I guess, depending on the species, but they definitely respond to the changing light.
What we were hearing yesterday was, it's certainly about the birds, very little about other creatures. The zoo, for instance, which is close by, didn't have a lot of unusual activity there. But what people were talking about were the insects. They said that the crickets just went absolutely insane at the moment of totality.
Yeah, well, again, that doesn't surprise me. Yeah, I would say insects and birds definitely respond to the changing light. And I will be curious about the zoos, because there were a number of zoos in the path of totality. I think also Nashville and the zoo in Portland, because Oregon, just outside the path, that were going to study animal behavior. And I'd be curious if there were any, say, mammals that responded. But it sounds like the birds and the insects were the ones that did the most reacting to the changing light.
Yeah, the things I saw on television indicated our zoo here, which is, of course, we were not exactly in the path of totality, very close to it, but they didn't really see any real difference in the animals there. Let me take another call.
I guess I would say, I was just going to say, the species that I think reacts in the most interesting way is Homo sapiens.
Well, that's sure, particularly if they have a cockatoo on their shoulder, right? let's bring in Bill. He's calling from West County. Bill, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Go ahead.
Yes. Well, I had a rather unique experience with the eclipse yesterday. I volunteer for an organization called Mind's Eye Information Service over in Belleville, and we broadcast the reading of printed material for the blind and visually impaired. We were asked by the Missouri Council for the Blind to come over and join their watch and listen party that they have for some of their customers. And I did audio description of the eclipse for about 24 people with visual impairments, people who could not see what was going on. But we were able to describe what was going on so that they could get a better sense of the whole eclipse process, the science behind it, the myths behind it, and then what was going on, you know, as totality came and went and all that. And it was a fascinating experience. They had a blast. I was amazed how much they got into just hearing it in words.
Did they sense anything different, that anything different was happening, do you know, Bill?
They did notice a slight change in temperature. There were some people there who had some eyesight. They were not completely blind, so they could tell when it was getting darker. All the audible things, you know, the crickets going berserk and that sort of thing, that they could tell. Some of them could see when the streetlights would pop on and that sort of thing. So they picked up on some of what was going on. But we kind of filled in the gaps so they could get the total picture, as it were.
Well, good for you, Bill, for doing that kind of work. I'm sure it was much appreciated.
It was. They had a great time.
And thank you for the call.
You're very welcome.
Dave Barron, the issue of temperature is one that surprised some people here. Everyone expected the temperature to go down, but it didn't decrease by as much as a lot of people expected, maybe just a couple of degrees. We were thinking 10, 15 degrees. What's your take on the temperature change?
Yeah, you know, so total eclipses, you just never know what you're going to get. Sometimes they get very dark. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes the corona is really vivid and beautiful. Sometimes it's kind of plain. Sometimes you feel a remarkable temperature drop. Sometimes you don't. And I would say, actually, for me, I felt the most dramatic temperature drop yesterday of any of the total eclipses I've seen. So this was my sixth. Now, for me, I was on a mountaintop where the wind was blowing in Wyoming. And when the sun was out, it felt kind of warm. When the sun went away, it was chilly. Mm. So it really depends on your local circumstances, I think.
I'm going to take one more call before we have to say goodbye to Dave Barron. Mike is going to join us from The Hill in St. Louis. Mike, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, Don. You got to get ready for 2024 because totality is unique. And I had planned to go down to DeSoto originally. I've been following this for about a year. And then with the weather getting problematic, I thought rather than risk going down there and it'd be a bust, I found out that The Hill had about 45 seconds of totality. I thought, that's enough. And I just rode up the hill on my bicycle, and it was an amazing experience. And I'm getting ready for 2024. And it's like Cleveland and Indianapolis and Vincennes, mm-hmm. Illinois are all right dead center. And so there's a lot of great possibilities for 2024, except you have to wait 7 years.
Mike, thank you so much.
I hope you can make it, right?
Yeah, right. Well, I'm certainly hoping to be here. Dave Barron, the fact that this part of the country is going to experience it again so soon after this one is really quite unusual, isn't it?
Oh, it's very unusual. Any given point on Earth sees totality on average about once every 400 years. But that's an average. And there are places where the paths of two total eclipses will intersect, and you guys are really lucky. Well, particularly Southern Illinois is really lucky around Carbondale to have two come in such quick succession. It's just the luck of the draw, and you guys got very lucky.
Well, I'll tell you, there are a lot of business people in this neck of the woods who will be very happy to see it again. A lot of money was made yesterday by people who, you know, serving food and offering places to stay. The rates were considerably higher, and a lot of money was exchanged yesterday.
Well, and I think that's great. It's nice, you know, you talk about how often it's bad things that help the economy. I mean, in the extreme case, a war or a natural disaster when suddenly, businesses have to ramp up their operations. Well, I'm happy to see people make some money off of something that's just such a joyous occasion.
And they're very happy, too, obviously. David Barron, I want to thank you so much for spending so much time with us again this day after the eclipse. Always a pleasure talking to you, and we'll talk to you again, I hope, before 2024.
Right, but certainly 2024, and thanks so much, Don.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back.